There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anabay sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabay has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anabay sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabay has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
He stalked them for months. He turned off his phone. He left behind just one thing, a knife sheath with DNA. The evidence, obviously, it is now public. The gag order is gone. And today we're breaking it all down with someone who knows exactly what those investigative steps look like on the inside. She's tracked killers, she's interrogated violent offenders, and she's here to walk us through how this case was built and what it tells us about Brian Koberger's mind. We're going to dig into this with FBI Special Agent retired Jennifer Coffendaffer as we pull back the curtain on Brian Koberger. And in this first area, now that we know that he surveilled them for all this time, Jennifer, the house over 20 times, studied criminology on, left almost no physical trace beyond the knife sheath. What does it tell us about him from a behavioral perspective when it comes to, well, trying to pull off this crime and what he did and what he did not do?
Well, you know, Tony, what this really tells us is about how well orchestrated this was, how well planned this was, how well thought out, and how educated he was. Obviously, a PhD student. He has had so many criminal justice classes at some of the, you know, finest criminal justice programs at DeSales and then also at Washington State University, which I think very much helped him in understanding what he needed to do to make sure he could pull off a crime. As you mentioned, the knife sheath was left behind. And then other than that, we have his footprint as well. That he left that was later found through an amino acid technique that's often used to bring up any blood or trace evidence regarding shoe prints and things. So, but other than that, you're exactly right. It showed that he was knowledgeable and he was committed to pulling off the perfect crime.
It shows that, I mean, obviously there was likely some obsession here that was going on for quite a bit of time leading up into this case. I think now we're all trying to figure out, okay, how long was this obsession? What kind of pre-planning was going on? And there's little drips of information that continue to come out. A lot of freedom of information requests have been put out. And in fact, the powers that be are slowly putting the pieces out there for us to see and to be revealed as to what they were looking at all this time. Some other pieces have continued to come out in various pieces of reporting. I was getting into the James Patterson and Vicki Ward book over the last week when I was gone in the airport. It's called The Idaho Four. There's some new reporting in there. Talking about the surveilling that he allegedly did outside of those homes, being able to look in those windows, very detailed accounts of what you could see through those windows. And when we now are starting to look at the vehicle data and new pieces that are coming out, it is theorized that Koberger was sitting there, not with a boombox outside of the window playing Peter Gabriel on it, but in a creepy white Hyundai Elantra, staring at a girl who was living her life, putting makeup on and off, getting ready for her day, getting ready for bed. That's an interesting thought to think that he's out there doing that.
Yeah, Tony, he learned this, in my belief, is really through what BTK did. This was exactly the modus operandi of BTK. And I'm not saying that from the standpoint of the type of serial killer I believe he was, doesn't match up necessarily to BTK, but how he conducted his business and surveillance exactly lined up. I teach in my classes all the time, if you are a young woman or a young man and you live by yourself, no one else is there, you have to change up your routine. Turn on different lights when you come in, exit from different ways, do different patterns to your school or your work. Don't make everything the same, because they absolutely hone in on that and follow what you're doing so that they can know where you're at in that house and when you're there.
And that's a scary thing about characters like this, is they can sit there out in the silence, and had he never acted, no one would be the wiser. There would have just been this creepy guy that he knew. He has the memories of sitting out there and staring into this window and allegedly watching Maddie Mogan get ready and, you know, live her life as a young, beautiful college girl, just kind of starting out. The fact that someone like this has no prior violent criminal record, is it odd that then escalated directly to this brutal four-person homicide, or is there more to Brian's story that just isn't on the record that we're going to slowly learn about? I'm not saying necessarily out murdering other people, although there are questions, but more so this sort of stalking-ish behavior, this sort of just in the shadows, I'm there, you don't know about me, but if you did find me out, what I'd be doing would likely be borderline, at least criminal behavior in some way, shape, or form.
Right. I think that it would be very interesting to see all his movements, not just to 1122 King Road area, but were there any other areas, either when he lived in Pennsylvania, when he lived in Idaho, any other possible targets that he just decided not to go for? Mm-hmm. In other words, would we see the same pattern in another neighborhood nearby or any place in mm-hmm. Pennsylvania before he moved to Idaho? I would be very interested to see all of that, because I would be surprised if this was just the first go around. Certainly, I've always said I think it's the first go around pertaining to murder, mm-hmm. But not burglary. I mean, I've always thought he could have possibly even dabbled in going in a house mm-hmm. of somebody that yeah. he was interested in when they weren't there. So I think that there's a lot out there. But to your question, did he particularly target these people? And did he do anything else in the past? Again, I think it was limited to these surveillance moves.
We are learning some new things. Some new allegations are out in that book, The Idaho Four, from James Patterson, from a family friend. And I don't have their name on top of me at this moment in time, but a family friend, it was a young child that he grew up with, and the mom that and the parents realized that every time Brian would come over, things would go missing. There was some very expensive things that went missing in that home. And this was back during Koberger's heroin days. The allegation is that he was taking these things. It was around the same time he stole his sister's phone and then went and tried to, he did sell it at the mall kiosk for money. His dad turns him in, he gets in trouble. The family friend also makes allegations in the book that Koberger was stealing directly from them on times where he could sneak something out of the house and nobody would get caught. It was only after he was going through the 12 steps in rehab that he came back to say, I'm sorry for stealing from you. He had a very large history of stealthy, creepy behavior that went under the radar for years. I'm just wondering how that then manifested from, you know, stealing an iPhone or an iPad to someone, your friend's mom's jewelry, to let's go kill four people.
Well, you know, when you look at the motivation for those crimes, I believe it truly was money motivated to support his heroin addict or addiction. But this is what's unique about it. Look at who he targeted. People who he should love, his sister, friends, family. In other words, just again, showing the lack of empathy on his part. The fact that he didn't care who he hurt and how close to them he was. So many people who become addicts and need money, they focus on strangers. They go into their homes and take and steal because they don't want to hurt the people they're closest to necessarily, because they have that empathy. To me, it just reiterates what we know, what he's personally said in his writings and what he has shown. And that is, he just doesn't care about anyone.
Is that a sign when you're an investigator that maybe you're on the right path, when you take a look at someone and they have a pattern of basically victimizing people very close to them that they supposedly love, that they still are engaging in regular personal relationships with, but have a record of hurting them with seemingly no empathy and no regret whatsoever, that maybe this person is capable of far worse if they're capable of that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you look at that from a victimology standpoint. You look at that from trying to figure out who is sitting across the desk from you or who you are investigating as to whether they could have committed this crime. Tony, when you see people victimizing the people that they're closest to, you know you're dealing with a different animal than the ones that victimize outside their inner circle.
Do people like that? I mean, it feels to me, I mean, from watching a lot on this subject and studying the history of some of these folks, These seem like the type that are not going to change. This seems to be kind of embedded DNA. When you watch or listen to Koberger speak, or you've looked at some of his earlier writings and such, this is the animal. This is who he is. It doesn't seem like this is something that's going to be trained out of him, or something that does he even recognize that there's something wrong at this point? Clearly, he seemed to a long time ago, but I'm wondering at this point, does he? Is he made peace with himself?
Oh, I think he recognizes it, and I think he doesn't care. I think he crossed the bridge where he learned to embrace his deepest, darkest wishes and desires. You know, what came out in the through source information on the Dateline special was very interesting about how the pornography he liked, you know, the pornography of young women who were asleep, who were drugged, so much in line with Ted Bundy. You know, the necrophiliac sort, the type that wanted a victim that absolutely could not respond to anything. Same with Dahmer. Dahmer, a similar type of the victim that they wanted to attack. It's really gross, and certainly he knew how dark he was, I think.
What I'm wondering about with him, and this is just conjecture, is was he naturally that dark of a person? Was he someone who gravitated toward looking up that sort of dark pornography? Someone who gravitated toward the dark idea of killing people in the way that he did? Or was this another extension of learned behavior? Because he had such trouble identifying who he was and what he was. And then he started studying these horrible minds like Ted Bundy and BTK and such. And did he just go, well, I can learn that too? And took on, because it almost feels like he took on the persona of other killers to make the killer that he is today. But I suppose you could look at those killers too, and everybody gets inspiration somewhere.
Well, I think when you look at him, and I agree on the inspiration, I think he looked on at a lot of different avenues, studied a lot of different serial killers. We know that because of all the classes he took and took under Ramsland and other classes that he took. But I truly believe it's like being a pedophile. No one just wakes up and becomes a pedophile later. Mm-hmm. They become a pedophile, I think, because of something deep and dark that's within them that sexually arouses them. And at the end of the day, the biggest thing I think to denote is this was a sexually motivated crime mm-hmm. that he did. Did he get to act out? No, because Kaylee was in bed with Maddie and it surprised him. And Xana was up. And all the things that just went wrong in the visualization of what he thought was going to happen that night, it all turned south for him. But this was sexually motivated, Tony, and this is something that I believe you're born with, so to speak, some, you know, desire like that. Either you have it or you don't.
Yeah, some sort of horrible primal something that exists in certain people. Let's talk about the investigation a bit. This is an interesting one. This is one where they didn't sit down and question him. What do you know about this? It was an immediate arrest. Once they knew at least who they thought was their guy early on, they came in and broke the door down at his parents' house in Pennsylvania. In a case like this, how rare is it to see a case to be this tight without ever interviewing the suspect, without ever having any sort of, you know, conversation with mom or dad or people next to him before they go in and make that arrest? That must show that they were very, very confident from the start that this is their guy.
Yeah. You know, when you have a case like this, first of all, you can imagine the fright that gripped Moscow, even though early on the messaging was, no, there nobody needs to be worried mm-hmm. about this. This is just a targeted event, right? Mm-hmm. And then slowly the truth really came out. And I think they just, their messaging was so horrible. As many of us said, listen, you have somebody capable of killing four people out there. This community is definitely not safe. And certainly the FBI knew that and law mm-hmm. enforcement knew that. And so the full court press and the ability of them to really put this case together with a approximate 20-page probable cause affidavit, which was just part of the evidence they had. They went in there strong. Remember, too, they received very special from the judge. They received the special ability to go in even before the normal hours of a hit, what we call a hit, right? At mm-hmm. 6 a.m., they went in before that. And this is very rare. And it shows that they very specifically were so concerned that if they didn't have surprise and speed and violence of action, that, in other words, they couldn't call him out. They didn't want to go out when he was awake and could perceive them. He could take hostages. He could kill his parents. He could kill himself and his parents. I mean, there were so many terrible scenarios when everybody really looks badly and says, why was this a huge SWAT operation? Well, that's why, Tony, mm-hmm. they needed to get in and on him quick. They did try to interview him. And initially, he started interviewing with them. And then he shut it down and asked for an attorney.
Really?
Yes. Yep. Right away, they tried to interview him. And there were... there was a spontaneous utterance made immediately upon arrest where he said, yes, words to the effect, did you arrest anyone else?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's been huge speculation. Mm-hmm. Remember early on, everybody thought, oh, there's a co-conspirator. Some people thought, no, that's a ruse. Bundy had done a similar ruse. Mm-hmm. And then I really thought he was worried about his parents, mm-hmm. like harboring him. That's kind of what I lean toward. But I think any of those, the latter two could be possible. Also him, you know, throwing out the ruse. But I really thought he might've been concerned about his parents, the fact they could that be harboring. But yeah, they did a very short interview and then before he invoked his rights.
One thing I wonder about with that, as we now look back on everything, and now we're going to see more that the gag order has been lifted, is did Koberger try to steer the investigation anywhere else? Obviously, they only had the knife sheet there as far as his DNA on it, and now we're learning more about that footprint. But other than that, there wasn't a lot to go on from the beginning. And the fact that he's asking, was there anyone else? It does make you wonder a little bit. Did he have the foresight in this to try and point them in another direction? Obviously, he was trying to do that a bit. If, in fact, that was Papa Roger on Facebook that was saying, oh, the Honda might be a red herring. was that a little too late to the game to try and steer the ship? Or I wonder if there was other things that were there that I don't want to say were missed, but were picked up and the investigator said, yeah, that's not evidence. That's somebody that's trying to steer us somewhere else.
Well, the Papa Roger, right? I mean, certainly if that was him, he was trying to lead and brag and be grandiose and, you know, just like BTK did. Mm-hmm. And just like many others have been done, Zodiac and many others, they love to be able to taunt mm-hmm. and to just revel in what they've done, only not been caught for. The Papa Roger always made a lot of sense to me, but we'll see. You know, still, we don't really have that answer. I think we're going to get the answer. I don't think that's something that they would withhold the metadata concerning the IP address for that. At one point, I know that source reporting from within side, you know, was that definitely it was Papa. But since then, there's been other mm-hmm. You know, posts that have come out that many sleuths have said, see, this is Papa again. I don't know. We're going to find out whether he was Papa or not.
I don't know how it couldn't be. I don't see how it couldn't be, or I guess someone communicating with him. That's the only other thing I could possibly think of, which I think that's a whole other road that there's no evidence really to go down, but how else would you have a caricature of yourself that looks pretty much exactly like you putting out information that nobody knows and nobody knows what you look like at the time? That just, I don't know. It just seems to defy any sort of logic, that it could have been anyone other than Koberger. But at the end of the day, it still plays into the pattern of behavior, whereas BTK was trying to put letters out into the Wichita Eagle through a floppy disk. He's doing the more modern thing and putting it out there on social media. Are you surprised that the criminology students, you know, in 2022 was too stupid to realize that there's IP addresses and that these sort of things can be tracked, which I'm sure is probably already been done by now, just not publicly released as of yet.
Well, you know, am I surprised? No, I just think he thought he would never get caught. You know, there's always this delusion of grandeur that these criminals have. Mm-hmm. They really do believe they're the smartest guy in the room and that they have their tracks covered and that nobody's going to catch them. But, you know, he put out two odd posts also, mm-hmm. One to do with, as I recall, an election and another school board election, I think it was, and another one. I actually contacted the people. I went down this rabbit trail, every single post he made. And I actually ended up getting into contact about one of the posts, and it never made sense because one, I think, was a California deal. It was a political deal. And mm-hmm. and there was another one, I think if I recall right, I called Missouri on. So there were some weird posts that Papa sent out at the same time that really made no sense. So was that an attempt to divert into other directions? I just always found it fascinating. And no matter who Papa ends up being, he would be the number one person I would want to interview on my podcast, other than if it's Brian Koberger, because I would never want to interview him.
It makes you wonder if maybe that was, again, post crime, trying to steer the narrative, maybe a little bit of, you know, overstepping, if you will, too, realizing, okay, well, I left the sheath. Maybe I need to press the gas over here a little bit harder since I messed that part up. I don't know. Anything seems to be possible in this as we're still learning more and more about it. Let's talk about the witness trauma. This is something that if there is a good thing about the case not going to trial, other than the families, I know some of them are happy that they don't have to go through it. Obviously the Gonzalvas, and some others, not so much. I hear both ends, and I understand both ends as best as I can, not having, you know, a child that was lost like they're going through. But the other big part of this is the ones that survive, the two roommates downstairs that don't have to go on the stand. Thank God. They don't have to be cross-examined by Ann Taylor. They don't have to have their legitimacy questioned. But you still have folks out there. And I think it's dying down. I hope it continues to die down. But there's always a big thing. What's going on with them? Why were they not calling 911? They're texting. I'm really confused. I'm freaking out. In real time, we're learning about all that. And we've learned in great detail about the accounts as to what went on that night, both in Howard Bloom's book and also in the James Patterson one. It goes into great detail. How did the FBI look at that initially? I mean, that is, you know, I guess on the surface, a little bizarre. If you got two people in the house that are not dead and everybody else is, you're going to wonder. But they obviously have a way of sorting out trauma and fact from fiction and strange behavior from traumatic behavior and behavior of someone who's just gone through, you know, one of the worst moments of their life. How was it that they walked so quickly into saying these girls have absolutely nothing to do with this when we look back on it?
Well, anytime you have a murder investigation, you start from within. You start in the smallest circle of people who are associated with your victims. So in this case, of course, the roommates are about as close as you can get because they were approximately in close and they were emotionally close and they had a relationship with them. So you have to start breaking down, you interview them, and then you corroborate what they say. Well, this was easy, or not corroborate one way or the other, mm-hmm. right? Either what they said makes sense or it doesn't from the independent facts. And in this case, it was easy because they had the cell phone information. They had the texting information. They were easily able to corroborate where these girls were in the house, what they were doing. They had all that information. So it was clear to them that they weren't involved in a murder at that time. There was no blood evidence leading to them, no DNA evidence. I mean, these girls hadn't covered up anything. Yeah. And so thankfully, one of the things in speaking of messaging that department did, Moscow, they were brilliant in putting out, these people are off the list. Mm-hmm. Leave them alone. They are not our suspects. And in so many times, in so many cases, we don't see that happening. Like the Sebastian Rogers case, just put out, no, they're not being considered anymore, mm-hmm. whoever it might be, mm-hmm. whether grandparents, people, whatever. And in this case, they did a great job because they saw what was happening. You know, they saw the social media running wild and accusing all of these people of this murder. I mean, we even saw a professor that was accused of, and thankfully that social media person was indicted mm-hmm. for that. So that's how they were able to do it, Tony. And you always start within, and it became very clear that the inner circle wasn't responsible, that this was a stranger type offense. That became clear really very early on.
We live in a weird world with social media right now and how anyone can almost say anything without a whole lot of repercussions. And it can be insanely damaging. We've seen it in this, and we've seen it in many other cases as well. And it's new territory where we have YouTube, where we have Facebook, where we have Twitter, we have TikTok, everything. It's all out there. Some of them are new, some of them are not. But in the big scheme of things, we're talking things that have existed really for 10, 15 years at the most, many of them less than that. And how quickly a rumor can spread and how quickly a life can be destroyed and a life can be ruined. Now, there's, of course, the balance of freedom of speech, being able to call something out and say, look, I think that someone should look here. And then there's, I'm going to call something out, but you're completely wrong on calling somebody out that has absolutely nothing against them. You're literally making things up or just going with rumors and repeating them over and over. Is this an area that we need to get better control of? Is there a way to get better control of it? I guess that's the bigger question. When you have these sort of things going on, because, I mean, these kids' lives were turned upside down with the internet trolling and sleuthing, if you will, that wanted to go down the road of blaming these young girls and even some others. But it takes a long time and it takes some money if you're going to try and go after them in a court of law. I mean, there are slander laws out there, but are they, do we need to reexamine some of this when it comes to accusing folks of crimes publicly?
You know, the slander and libel laws, I just don't think have ever caught up as of yet to really what's happening with all these social media venues.
Yeah,
they're just not caught up and they need to really be rewritten. And it's interesting because slander and libel, of course, they have sort of two pieces. Well, certainly the defamation portion. You also have to prove that the person actually has had negativity happen to them, right? In other words, that something bad has happened as a result of the slander. In other words, did somebody lose their job? Did somebody get falsely arrested? Was somebody kicked out of a neighborhood or something by a homeowners association? Something like that, that shows the quid pro quo, that the slander slash libel lined up with something detrimental happening to them. And that, of course, is so often what the issue is, right? I mean, you can have a straight libel and slander suit where you just show a lie. If you can prove it, this is the lie. Like Kash Patel recently filed a suit because a former FBI agent said that he spends more time in bars than he spends behind his desk on the seventh floor of the FBI headquarter building. And so Kash Patel has filed this, you know, suit against him saying that's just a lie. And I'm sure he can show how much time he spent one place than the other. Of course, was that a tongue-in-cheek statement by that FBI agent? But sorry, I don't mean to digress.
No.
I just mean to say our laws just are not lined up with what happened to these kids. For somebody who followed this from moment one, they went after Jack, the boyfriend of Kaylee Gonsalves, hard. I remember saying, oh my gosh, if this is the evidence you're going to use, you would never make it as any sort of investigator if this is what your, you know, the stronghold of your case is because she called him in the morning. You know, those of us who have been young ladies and had a crush or maybe on a breakup and you have some cocktails and you call, love call, your interest ad nauseum, that doesn't mean he killed you. So, and Dylan Mortensen, because she didn't call 911. Look, none of us could have imagined the atrocities that took place. We still don't know the full breadth of those atrocities, but none of us would have said, oh, I think I saw somebody in a mask. What is that going on with that? I bet you my four roommates have been murdered.
Yeah, not a thought that would go through anyone's head whatsoever. Let's talk about
maybe now.
Yeah,
well, maybe
yeah,
now.
Maybe
Tony.
Now, and also maybe now too. And I don't know what this is. This has been something I've always done through my entire life. Lock your doors. Just lock your doors. I don't care where you live. I don't care how big a city, as small a city, how safe a town. It's just kittens that live outside of your home, and nothing else. Lock your door. And I know their lock was broken and they're college kids and they don't think about it. I feel like there needs to be a little more stressing of the importance of safety and these sort of steps with young people, because there seems to be, as all young people do, feel a little bit, unstoppable and, immune from anything. But until it happens, I don't know what it'll take for that. I don't know it ever will. I think there's a nice comfort in feeling you don't have to until it's too late. But that was a big point in this one. Let's talk about the motive here, the void that still exists, at least as of now. We haven't, as of we're recording, the sentencing has not taken place, but when he did admit to the crimes, it was just a yes and a no type answer. What else do you think we're going to find out here? Do you think that we're going to learn more from Koberger about what his motivation was, and how he acted on it, why he acted on it? Or is this going to be something that he's going to go to his grave, or he's going to wait for his place and time to reveal?
I just, just personally, I don't believe the motive is this difficult. I think the motive is he's a sick individual, mm-hmm. who was the wallflower of life, that wanted to be this amazing, grandiose, loved, figured, and he absolutely dreamed about and fantasized about for years killing a woman who was asleep, who was beautiful, who meant his thought process, and attacking viciously and then sexually assaulting them. I think that's the motive. Mm-hmm. But your question, I think, is, are we going to hear it from Koberger's mouth?
Yeah.
And my point is, I don't trust anything he would ever say. Mm-hmm. I think he will definitely, if it is made available, he'll interview someday with probably multiple people. Hopefully someday he chooses the behavioral science unit of the FBI. They're called BAU now, mm-hmm. Analysis unit, because that's where the information is really important to put in their catalog of information, so that, purportedly you can identify when things like this might come. But Catherine Ramsland was his guidance counselor, taught him in 4 classes, and had a serial killer, I believe, right under her nose, and had no idea, as she well admits. Mm-hmm. I still think it's good to chronicle it to understand these people. Mm-hmm. But I don't, I'm convinced that you can never see somebody and say, oh, there's one right there. He's going to do it, because I think there might be a lot of them out there, but they never act.
That's what I'm wondering about. We were talking earlier about the kind of the peeping Tom-ish type character early on, where he was looking in the window and such. There's probably a lot of that out there that we are never aware of, that do exist to this day, but they never go further. And that's the scary part, of just being aware of your surroundings and what's out there. But how can you be aware when someone's, out of reach and a bit out of sight, but they're still lurking? It's a scary thing to know that it might be out there, and that in reality, the odds are fairly high that they are out there. When we're looking at Koberger's, lack of admission of any sort of motive, but we're trying to understand where he was coming from, where his mind went so far off. Is that something that really does serve a purpose to hear, if not just for the families to hear the twisted world of Brian Koberger, or is it just, as some would say, just the rantings of a madman? This made sense to me because that made sense to me, but in the real world, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
I think in the right hands, meaning in the behavioral psychologist hands and in the hands of they like to call them profilers, mm-hmm. but people who actually spend their life's work, like a Dr. Gary Mercado, studying mass murderers, mm-hmm. I think this information is important to them so that they can get a true analysis of the psyche of people. A lot of these people end up otherwise dying and never say a word. And I think this way you have an analysis in a totality from lots of different people who are cut from the same cloth that they can talk about because people are interested in it. Yeah. But I'm not sure, and not to be cynical, but I just don't know that other than it being sort of interesting, intriguing, however you want to call it, trying to get into the mind of somebody like this, I don't think it has practical application for prevention, sadly.
Yeah. Maddie's injuries and all the injuries of everyone we're learning about more and more. I know you've dug into that a little bit more. What has been found out? What has been released now? And what does it tell us more about, without getting into super great detail, I mean, the brutality of this and really just showing, I guess, more of the mind of where Koberger was on this. This wasn't just a let's run in and stab people real quick. This seemed to be like there was a target, there was intention, and there was a lot of rage.
Well, I think where the rage even more intensified was, imagine you have thought about this for years and you've planned it. You bought your K-bar months and months prior to this year. You've been planning this moment that was supposed to be the most cathartic, beautiful moment, your first kill. I mean, I'm just saying what he was thinking. And I'm not trying to be poetic.
No.
It's like, speaking from his view, you're probably like, Jen, we're not talking about your wedding.
It's like the Wonder Years from hell.
Yeah. It's just sick.
Remember when?
And there's Maddie laying there exactly how you want her, sound asleep, passed out. And then, oh my gosh, there's Kaylee there. So your entire dream, your vision, what you want is completely ruined now. That's how I see it. Mm-hmm. I think obviously, you know, cut Maddie's throat and then went on to deal with Kaylee in the most brutal of ways because she woke up and, you know, I think the gag marks have been talked about, which would be on the sides of the mouth. Mm-hmm. I don't think this was an official tie up with a gag. I think this would have been done with his hand. Some people are saying the knife sheath, there was DNA of Kaylee on the knife sheath, you know, that he could have put that in the mouth. But for those of you who have been in a fight, the fighting dirty situation like this, I think he just used his hand to shut her up. And if you do that, you can see you're not going to get bit doing that and cause that. Remember, this would have been all happening very fast. We know he beat her about the face. Now we're hearing her nose was broken. I had not heard of her nose being broken before recently, nor about these gag marks. So those are the two sort of new things. We knew she had been beaten about the head. We knew it was brutal because she put up a struggle. And I think he was particularly enraged at her, not because she was the target. Remember, the target was slit the throat and have a sexual interaction. This was something different. She ruined his plan. That's how I see it.
Yeah, the anger came in that form because it stopped him from being able to do allegedly what maybe he wanted to do. That would have made this more, on the surface, a sexually motivated crime. I know there's been some that have said this wasn't, but I mean, at the end of the day, it truly was. You don't have to go that far. There doesn't have to be any sort of rape or sexual interaction to go on for it to be a sexually motivated crime.
Right. And while I figure believe he was an incel, I do believe that. I think he was involuntarily celibate because he couldn't get the girls that he wanted to be involved with him sexually. Mm-hmm. So I think he was an incel from that standpoint.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was an incel from the standpoint, and I know I disagree with the book that's been written in this vein. I agree with a lot of the book and disagree with this point. This was not that. This was a sexually motivated situation like a Bundy. That's how I see it. I've always seen it that way. I don't see it as a copycat of you know, the Roger incel that went off and murdered in that way. I mean, he murdered people he knew in his house, and he went on a rampage. That was not this. This was a stealth, well-planned-out, horrible, vicious attack of a fledgling serial killer.
Had it just been the one, and this is just speculation, had he just got the one person that he was targeting and got out of there, I wonder if we'd be talking about him today. I wonder if he would have gotten away with it. I wonder if, because there was the others there, that is, you know, the crux of this. That was the downfall that he didn't see coming. And I also do wonder if walking out of that house that day, knowing he killed four people, if that empowered him mentally as well. If because he walked out with far more than he was expecting. I'm wondering if that gave him more of the gusto to become, if he was in fact the Papa Roger, the taunting and that sort of stuff. If he thought he was really, you know, too big for his britches, as I guess my mother would have said in 1985, after walking out of there. What do you think?
Well, two things. First of all, I completely agree with you. I think it was the tussling and the rampage situation with Kaylee that caused that knife sheath to dislodge. Mm-hmm. You know, he had to have had it secured on his person in some way, either in his pocket, if he had the coveralls on and then underneath had the other outfit, or if he had regular pants, which is a possibility. We don't know. We're going to find out if he had that secured in there. Mm-hmm. Again, you always want your knife sheath handy. Typically, you don't want it on your belt because it's hard to draw. Everybody can picture that. Mm-hmm. You know, the pulling for the knife out of the sheath is very difficult to do it when it's on your person. Still, it wasn't obviously affixed to his person. We know that because it was left behind. Would it have been left behind if he simply had done what he planned with Maddie? I don't know. To your point, yep. And that we might not know it was Brian Koberger, or at least have his DNA in this strong case. So I agree with you. That knife sheath was the ticket to a conviction.
What are you waiting to see come out? What are you most curious about that has not yet, as of our recording, been released?
I want to know about other possible victims that he had planned. And I think that they have a lot of that from the standpoint of other surveillance. Mm-hmm. I really am curious to see if what I suspect is true, and that is that there were other 1122 King Roads. He focused on that one, and that's the one he went with. Mm-hmm. But if there were any others out there, any other people that, wow, they didn't know how close they were to this. I want to know about that shoe print. I've always wondered if that van shoe was his shoe. Mm-hmm. I want to know what size it was. I think he was size 13, if I recall correctly. Don't hold me to that. It could have even been a 15, but I've posted on the shoe size. So I think they know if it was that large size of shoe. I want to know, I really want to see the interviews of both Bethany and Dylan, the detail of it all. I mean, we have such snippets. They interviewed them multiple times, and those are going to be long, long 302s.
Yeah,
I would love to see all that information. I want to see the FD-302 of Brian Koberger that was began and ended. Mm-hmm. I want to see the exact video surveillance entirety of exactly pinpointing where he was, where he parked, where they have him. I know they might not have it precisely, but they're going to have it pretty close. I want to see the different bandages. I want to learn sort of from him in terms of the true, how he planned this, mm-hmm. and exactly what he did to get there.
There's a lot still to be learned here in the Brian Koberger case. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, as always, thank you for your insight.
Thank you, Tony.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabe brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink-in feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Washablesofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabe Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out washablesofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabe sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabe, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabe brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink-in feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabe, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabe brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink-in feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.